This is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, September 5th, 2025. I'm Breanne Doyle. Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. With a new political season underway, Amy Robichaux, CEO of Mothers Matter Canada, and Rabble publisher Sarah Sahagian look at how Prime Minister Mark Carney's government might impact mothers and families this fall. From shifts in funding for women and gender equality, to the vital role of both formal and informal supports, they break down what to watch for and advocate for in the months ahead. Here are Sarah Sahagian and Amy Robichaux in conversation. Take a listen.
I'm so pleased to welcome a friend of mine to the podcast. Amy, would you like to introduce yourself to the group? You are the CEO of Mothers Matter. So our listeners, I think, will be very keen to hear about what Mothers Matter does, and we'll have a wonderful conversation about really how we can all be allies to parents in this country.
I'm thrilled to be here. So yeah, I have the immense privilege of being the CEO at Mothers Matter Canada. And we're a Canadian-wide national charitable organization that runs programs and advocacy. Our goal is to ensure that motherhood is transformed in society's eyes, that we're equipping every single mother in Canada with all the tools they need to be leaders in their families and in their communities. And what that translates into is really intense on-the-ground interventions that are community-based for mothers who are facing the most extreme forms of social and economic isolation. So our programs work with a lot of women who have recently arrived in Canada as mothers, with mothers who are living in extremely rural and remote communities, as well as urban Indigenous mothers. And mothers facing really extreme forms of poverty. And then we also do as much advocacy as humanly possible and on just creating the necessary systems and culture to support parenting and in particular motherhood, because parenting while a woman is, like everything else while being a woman, significantly harder.
So one thing I really wanted to pick your brain about is that it's interesting to see what's happening with the new government. Mark Carney's Liberals definitely do not seem as invested in social capital, I would say. That would be my take. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. And there has been an 80% cut to funding for the Ministry of Women and Gender Equality. So I'd just like to get your take on that and how that could affect mothers across the country.
Yeah, I think this is a really important conversation for us to be having as a country right now. There are three components to it that I think are really important to think about. The first component is I want us to be really clear on what is or isn't happening with the funding for Women and Gender Equality Canada. And I'll be clear, I am concerned about the news that has come out, but I think we need to frame it with full accuracy. It's not an 80% cut. Wage Women and Gender Equality Canada was created by the previous administration, the Trudeau Liberals, to be its own department. It was hived off as a section of Heritage Canada, which is great. Super glad that it became its own advocacy and full-fledged ministry. In doing that, it had initial rounds of funding. And what's happening with these projection report with the 80% decrease in funding is a couple things. First, a bunch of the funding that was initially set up for the department is being sunsetted, which was always the intention. It was the intention over every other report that has come out. And they do these reports annually. There's the fiscal projections for every department. Every department's required to do them. The second piece is two of the large programs that have existed within WAGE, the Women's Fund, the general fund that funds women's programs, as well as the Violence Against Women initiatives and funding, are coming to an end at the end of 2028. They were always intended to come to an end at the end of 2028 or to be sunsetted. The unique situation we found ourselves in, and this is not me deflecting blame, because I think that we'll get into the second thing that's important to understand about this. But what's happening is typically we would have had a budget in the spring that would have either renewed some of these sunsets or extended these projections further out so that these three-year projections would have shown a fully funded or a mostly funded department, and then the sunsets would have happened after the projection years and wouldn't have been included in the report. So the delay from the Carney administration in producing a budget in the spring is the reason why we saw these numbers become so public. Typically, they're not public. But this is not news. If you'd looked at the funded projections of any of the previous budgets under the Trudeau administration, you would have seen the same drop-off of funding that was happening in the 2028 fiscal. It's not new. And I'm glad that we're advocating as a sector and folks who work on gender equity and who are engaged with gender equality policy in this country and inclusion, that we're alert to it. We also need to realize this isn't a cut. This was always the way it was intended to be. So I'm hesitant to blame the Carney administration for the cut, because the only thing we know right now is that we don't know what they're going to do. We don't know if there'll be extensions to the wage funding coming in the fall budget. We can certainly hope there will be. So we don't know what we don't know right now. And that's the second piece I do put in terms of the funding decrease at wage and the sunsetting of up to 80% of their funds. That I do put and hold the Carney administration responsible for is that there has been an opportunity to communicate what would happen, even though the budget hasn't come out. There is an opportunity to communicate that, yes, we are dealing with existential systemic crises in terms of how our country is set up, and we need to make investments in some areas, and there's going to be hard choices. And for those of you who are working with social programs in the government and socially funded endeavors in the government, here's what you can expect or what you shouldn't expect, or here's the line of communication. There was a way to create the comms around this that didn't become incendiary when this report came out. And I am, frankly, and so that leads to my third part, which is I am frankly disappointed that we haven't seen outreach from the political figures, so from the minister's offices and PMO staff from the Carney administration around what we should expect or what prices we're going to be expected to pay as people, as allies in creating a better country in terms of the shift in priorities. Because at the end of the day, I support where the increased funding has been going. The announcements that have been made, the work that the Carney government is doing to secure our country, to see ourselves and our government take ourselves seriously as a sovereign nation, these are investments that are long overdue. And those of us in the social sector and in the equity sector have been having these conversations for a long time, which is we can create a great society, but if we don't have the mechanism to continue that society, then we're only looking at half of the puzzle. What I feel like has gone missing is that the Carney government's done a great job of looking at that other half of the puzzle, which is the sustainability of our nation as a social entity and an economic entity and a physical entity. And I think has been remiss in not having greater communications with the folks who are working in the third sector, in the social services sector, in the society and culture sector. Because at the end of the day, this is actually a yes and. We need both. And there are opportunities to pull us all on side. And I think those have been missed.
The context you explained, I think, is very helpful for people. And the fact that there is a lack of communication, I think, can be very worrying for people when we're talking about a vulnerable group, right? So we're talking about women and gender minorities who are often are more likely to be marginalized. And also, I know that when wage was set up, there were these sunset clauses, as you explained very well. But I think there's a concern that all of these problems it was set up to solve have, if anything, seemed to have gotten worse. And so the ministry becomes more and more relevant. So maybe we would think a progressive government would reevaluate those sunsets and think, you know what, we haven't seen the progress we wanted. Let's try to extend this.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I agree with that. And the key to knowing whether or not that's happening would be communication from the Carney mm-hmm. administration. Mm-hmm. Hey, we know there are sunset clauses. Wage will be in this next budget. Mm-hmm. Working with interest holders and leaders in the sector to talk about mm-hmm. what that's going to look like or need to look like, or we want their input on that. There are things that they can say that would prove our, I would say, our faith that they're mm-hmm. acting out and implementing progressive policies, even mm-hmm. talking about them. Yeah. And I will say it's interesting. I understand from like a capital P politics perspective, the desire mm-hmm. to shift and identify the Carney administration away from the Trudeau administration, which did a lot of talking about progressive values. And frankly, my concerns and my interaction with that administration was the opposite of this, which was like, you're talking a lot and you're saying all the right things. And I'm thrilled for the photo op and the profile and those things. But what's the follow through? Where's the money? Where's the smart investment that's actually seeing results? Because to your point, since this is set up, the issues have gotten worse. And so to me, this comes down to a lack of communication. I'm not ready to give up the ghost that this is a progressive government. I'm mindful that this is the government, very candidly, as an organization we wanted to be working with, given our options in the last election. And I'm also frustrated that the message control is so strict to the seeing opportunities to be brought alongside to as a sector and as leaders in social advocacy to actually become on board with the nation building. I think there's a lot of energy here that would ensure that that would like to be part of these projects, these Canada-wide projects, these nation building projects, and the messaging that the Carney government is putting out. And we not only haven't been invited to the table, we've received crickets. And then in the vacuum that's been created, now we're all concerned because we keep hearing it. And frankly, the longer we don't hear strong messaging or direct communication, the more nervous we're all going to be. And I think it's important here to also mention that this isn't just around, like when we talk about the impacts of the government on equity and inclusion in our society and progressive culture that, you know, obviously we advocate for. It's not just Women and Gender Equality Canada, which is a small department, always has been. It comes out to Employment and Social Development Canada, which is the largest government department. It's a behemoth. It also represents a significant portion of our GDP, the funding that runs through that. Not only those that it employs directly, but the systems that it keeps going. Like, it is incredibly important. And we don't have a clear sense of what or how ESDC is going to be impacted by these let's invest more and spend less conversations or messaging that's coming from the Carney administration. And we have Citizenship and Immigration Canada, which is the other department that my organization, that Mothers Matter Canada, interacts with a lot. We have significant funding and programs that we run through their settlement program for women who are and mothers who are brand new to Canada. And, you know, in this last round of settlement funding, there was a huge reduction in funding that came into the settlement sector after the immigration numbers and targets were reduced because the funding is per person coming in. And so the whole sector, everybody who's working to bring and integrate newcomers into Canada had their funding reduced. And it went from a 5-year contract to produce these services to a 3-year contract. And we're hearing that that's going to be happening again at this end of this 3-year contract. So there's the messaging we are getting is that the funding's getting pulled and we're not seeing the bigger picture or being invited to the bigger picture about how to replace that. So it's broader than just wage. I think wage is a bit of simultaneously this 80%, a bit of a red herring and something to look at. But I think we need to be looking at how, and my approach, and I'm in Ottawa as we're having this conversation, is looking at what's the government-wide approach in terms of ensuring that we are being more accountable in the investments the government is making to create and maintain its responsibility for every member of society to have this an opportunity to be fully included. And that's the conversation I'm interested in having. I don't want to see an 80% reduction in wage, but if there was a 30% reduction in wage combined with a commitment to more effective programming and an integration of gendered policies and programs across all departments, I'd be okay with that. That feels more effective. That might be more efficient. But those are the conversations we're not getting. We're hearing a lot about let's be more efficient, let's be more effective, but we're not hearing how, and we're not being invited to the table as a sector to contribute to that.
Could you just explain for our listeners why it's so important as we think about all these nation building projects to think about marginalized mothers and how we can make space and integrate marginalized mothers into these grand plans that the government is creating?
It is absolutely critical. So creating stronger economies and greater earning potential for Canada and more security for our country as a whole is a noble task. It's not distributed so that everybody has access to it or can contribute to that. Mm-hmm. We're not addressing the underlying growing inequality within our country. So we could, strengthen the circle around our society. But if our society is as stratified as it is right now and continuing to go, we're not actually strengthening our economy or our society for everybody. And so the reason mothers in particular play such a huge role in this is that there's a generational impact. And we know this. There have been hundreds of studies done on the what we terribly call developing countries and the potential for social development, that if you invest in women and mothers, you're actually investing in long-term benefits in the community, because we know there's generational impact. We know that a mother who works outside the home in a job that is that has a living wage and that she's fully qualified in, we know that it means her children are more likely to earn more over the course of their careers. So there's a really strong economic argument for this. There's also a really strong social argument, because in a world, and this is definitely happening in Canada, we've all felt it, I think, really acutely, even post-pandemic, where the informal structures of community have broken down a little. You know, our neighbors aren't as neighborly. We don't have, because of the size of our geography, lots of families don't have parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles to help out with child rearing and be part of that broader family. So the fabric that supports families that are led by mothers in terms of the emotional, social, physical labor, still to this day, stats play that out, isn't as strong as it used to be, even 10 years ago, even 5 years ago in Canada. And so it's that comes back to equipping women, equipping mothers with everything they need to help their families thrive, because that's just a benefit not only to them and their children, it's a benefit to everybody. The other side of that is what we can't do, and one thing that we see really acutely in our work, is build the success of that next generation or try to do that on the backs of mothers. And so when mothers are suffering from increased exhaustion, increased physical ailments, increased mental health issues, when we are wrecking mothers in order to support the growth or the continuation of our society, that's not sustainable either. And we see that very clearly in Canada in the trend towards more women choosing not to have children. So fertility in Canada is a big issue, and it's not just, I mean, the high level indicators are it's the cost of housing and it's the cost of living. It's also that a lot of women are looking around these days at their counterparts or women who are slightly older than them, who are mothers, and going, that does not look doable. And that's a demographic problem for us. That's a social problem. That's an economic problem. So those are all the very sort of the tangible reasons why it's important to do it. But I would come back to saying it's also just fundamentally the right thing to do. If we believe we should have a strong country and build a nation where we are all proud of and can participate in, we need everybody to be able to do that. And so that means it's not just about securing the top line numbers in the economy or in society. It's actually about securing everybody's ability to participate or access those. And it's the right thing to do to make sure that all mothers have access to their community, to the economy, so they can contribute to both of those things and to their own leadership and knowledge of their value as individuals. It's just fundamentally the right thing to do. And I worry about what it says about a society that doesn't prioritize that.
And so if you had a magic wand and you could magically see your top two priorities implemented and see the Carney government's policies just really, really serve organizations like yours as well as you want them to, what are the top two things you would want?
Okay, so we can't build policies about what we don't have information on. So I would like to see our Census, Statistics Canada, Employment Social Development Canada, Wage, all the departments take a different lens towards the unit in our society. I'd like to see more information on families. So which is where motherhood comes in. So to understand how families are doing, how mothers are doing within families, the differences in terms of family outcomes in rural and remote communities and urban communities, amongst newcomers, amongst urban indigenous communities, amongst racialized communities, suburban versus urban. I'd like to be able to have a stronger sense of where are families succeeding. And that's not to say that we say a family is X, Y equals Z, but is that anywhere we have a unit that is considering themselves a family, what do they look like? What are they doing? How well are they doing? Because that's where we get stronger information on who's choosing to have children, who isn't, how many children are we having, what's the success, what's the health outcomes for the parents. So I'd like to see an emphasis on, are these nation building projects, is the work we're doing to secure Canada as a serious country, raising all families, elevating all families' access, because that gets us into the generational things. The other thing I'd like to see is engagement with those of us in the inclusion and social sector who are doing this, these interventions to bring people into the economy and into society. I'd like to see room at the table for us in terms of discussing mm-hmm. these priorities and how we might be able to be part of the plan. And I have no doubt that the current administration has a bold plan to move this country forward. But I'd like, and it doesn't have to be me, although it would be lovely if it was, I'd like to know that there are folks who are doing the work that I'm doing who are sitting at those tables. So those are my top two things. And then I would like to see wage refund fully funded. And I'd like to see, so that's number three. And then number four, and I know you didn't ask for three or four, is I'd like to see us held as a sector and the government funding. I'd like to see better outcomes management. I'd like to actually know that we're met, to figure out if we're measuring the right things to know if we're making progress. Because I do think that was an area that lacked in the Trudeau administration. We got a lot of money out the Trudeau administration got a lot of money out the door, had got the, you know, really put the values in of doing this work in the headlines. But we did not, they did not do and have not done. And I was part of this, ensure that we were able to measure and articulate what our outcomes are, both so that we could defend the work, but also so we can know what's working and what isn't working. Because the last thing I want to do is continue to put effort into and money into efforts that aren't moving mothers, in my case, forward. I don't want to use resources, time, people, money irresponsibly or in a way that isn't the most effective possible because we are already fighting an uphill battle and doing it inefficiently or ineffectively isn't helping our cause either.
Based on the research you've seen, what would be the best way that everybody listening can be an ally to our community and to mothers in general?
If you are not a parent, or you are a grandparent, or your children, you're not actively parenting young children at the moment, my request would be that you reach out to parents in your community who have young children. You've got a family who you see, you know, frequently walking down the street or at your local park or take the bus with you on a regular basis, just get to know them. And the reason I say that is it comes back to we live in a society and in a culture where so many of those families don't have the informal supports that we had 50 years ago because we've created greater distance between the extended family because, again, really strongly, we saw the effects after COVID of sort of those informal supports coming apart. And we absolutely need to rebuild those informal social supports because it's going to help take the strain off the formal ones. It's also going to increase the cohesiveness in the fabric of our communities and really help mothers in particular not feel so alone. So if you have the opportunity to support a mother in your community, even in a small way, I'd say go out and look for that opportunity. And then also, if you're willing to do more, advocate in your community for childcare, take a look at the zoning policies around, are we able to build childcare spaces? Because that, again, because we need these more formal supports now, is going to be the next single largest thing that can happen, in addition to just befriending a mother and helping, knowing that she's not alone, that she's not isolated, and that she's got people to talk to, whether it's for a glass of wine or emergency childcare, because she's got to, you know, run out and do something. And those little pieces help a lot. So those are the two things I'd say. And then the last, if you're an employer and you're listening to this, please, please review your benefit packages and ensure that they support pregnancy and fertility work, ensure that they support leave for pregnancy loss and not just pregnancy. Ensure that your benefits packages support families. If you're an employer, take a hard look at, have you run your benefits package through a gender lens recently and looked at how it might affect women differently or benefit mothers? Because I guarantee you, if you haven't, there are either cost effective or cost neutral changes you can make that are going to significantly improve the lives of the mothers and women who are thinking about becoming mothers or who might be interested in that in your workforce and therefore improve your productivity though.
Thank you so much, Amy. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in.
That was Rabble publisher Sarah Sahagian and CEO of Mothers Matter Canada, Amy Robichaud, in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Amy and Sarah. Switching gears now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. For that, let's turn things over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week with labor news. Monday was Labor Day, and in BC, it was not only a time for celebration, but also a time to rally for labor rights. BC's largest public sector union, the British Columbia General Employees Union, is currently on strike. According to the union, public sector wages in BC have not kept up with the rising cost of living. The Friday before the strike, the union voted more than 92% in favor of taking strike action. Nearly a quarter of all BC public sector workers reported working a second job to make ends meet. Staying in labor news, Unifor, Canada's largest private sector union, held their convention last week in Vancouver. The convention saw National President Lana Payne and her executive team re-elected to a second term. Payne became the first woman to lead the union when she was elected at the last convention 3 years ago. The ongoing trade war with the U.S. was top concern at the union convention this year. The union has called on the federal government to take specific steps to protect Canadian jobs and workers, including penalizing companies that send Canadian jobs to the U.S. and banning foreign ownership of critical minerals. Unifor demonstrated Palestinian solidarity at the convention as well by bestowing their highest honor, the Nelson Mandela Award, to the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate. Nearly 250 journalists in Gaza have been killed by the Israeli military since 2023. Also this week, federal tax employees are campaigning against cuts to the public service by Mark Carney's Liberal government. Since May of 2024, more than 3,000 tax workers in call centers have lost their jobs. These workers are often the people Canadians rely on to help with employment insurance, tax returns, parental leave, business support, and more. The workers are members of the Union of Taxation Employees, which is a component of the larger Public Service Alliance of Canada. In a statement, the union said, quote, "Instead of investing in the services that people across the country depend on to help them during tough times, the federal government is cutting jobs and weakening critical services already under pressure," end quote.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.
My name's